This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Near the start of my checkered career in radio, I hosted a show called Red Beans and Rice and played records by Muddy Waters and Elmore James, old masters even in those days, and searched through the new releases that came into the radio station, not by artists' names so much, but by label. Records on King and Delmark and Alligator were always worth a listen, but nothing made it to the turntable faster than a 45 from Stax, the Memphis R&B label that brought us Otis Redding, Booker T and the MGs, Sam and Dave, and Eddie Floyd. The man who helped write and record Knock on Wood joins us now on the phone. Eddie Floyd was one of Stax Records' major artists. He's with us now by phone from his home in Montgomery, Alabama. Thanks for joining us.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me. And what a wonderful way to say hello to Washington, D.C. by playing the record.
Well, you wrote that song. What was the inspiration?
Well, Steve Cropper and I, of Booker T and the MGs, we wrote a lot of songs together. And we would always try to find, you know, different ideas. At that particular time, it was raining and thundering and lightning, and we sort of like got the idea from that. And the superstitious thing of, knock on wood. And we related all of it together and came up with the song.
Literally, you were sitting around and saying, thunder, lightning, the way you love
well,
me.
Well, you're right. When you're writing the songs, it was actually doing that. And we're trying to come up with lyrics. And you try to get lyrics any way that you can. And so there it is. It's thundering, lightning. I said, the way you love me is frightening. Yeah, that's a great idea. Let's write it that way. I better knock on wood for good luck, though, so.
Now, that was a huge hit for you and for Stax Records, but unlike a lot of the Stax artists, your roots were in Detroit. How did you end up at Stax?
Well, I was in Detroit first with my Uncle Robert West. I sung with the group called the Falcons, and that was 1958-59. We had You're So Fine, a hit record. Then Wilson Pickett came into the group. So I sort of started watching all the Motown kids, start off. But I went to Washington, D.C., and I met a gentleman named Al Bell, who was a disc jockey there, who took me to Memphis with him to write some songs for Carla Thomas at that time.
Carla Thomas, the daughter of Rufus Thomas.
That's right. And that was my introduction to Memphis. I found it to be very much like Detroit was, as far as the family, like Motown, they all, collaborated together.
Mm-hmm.
And the people at Stax did the same thing, so I felt very, very comfortable there.
There are moments when it all seems to come together, when, a collection of people is suddenly, much greater than the sum of its parts.
It's true. And everybody at Stax would, really help each other. If I had a project that I was working on, many artists contributed to it. We had Booker T and the MGs. Booker T would play keyboards. The MGs would play behind us, the marquees with the horns. We had Isaac Hayes would come in, and he played the actual little bridge part of Knock on Wood. So we had a lot of people to work on it.
Now, I understand, how would you characterize the Stax sound? I mean, you had those, that fantastic rhythm section and the horns.
Well, it was very similar to the Motown. I mean, when I first heard that, it was the same thing with Jameson playing the bass. Same thing when I got to Memphis with Duck playing the bass.
Duck Dunn.
Yeah. So similar. So I can't hardly think about one without thinking about the other. Now, and they both had such dynamic rhythms.
You just came back from London and a tour with your songs there, so I guess this old music still hasn't coming back.
Oh, yes. We've been singing the music all the time. We've never stopped, actually, every year since 66. I've actually played somewhere in Europe. We play the Far East. We play everywhere. The music, that particular music, has been handed down through generations. I'm in the process of, at the moment, recording Knock on Wood all over again in a new phase.
Now, you must have played that song with 1,000 different bands at this point.
How about 2,000? More than that, actually.
Is there anything, though, to match the magic of the original? Is there anything that will match the magic of that original?
I don't think so. The great thing about it is that I'm still here to be able to sing this song again, and everybody seemed to be very excited about it. They seem to think I'm going to match it. So.
Eddie Floyd, first of all, thanks so much, not only for Knock on Wood, but for all your other songs. We appreciate it.
Thank you so very much.
And thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Eddie Floyd was a singer-songwriter for Stax Records, and he was with us on the phone from his home in Montgomery, Alabama. Stax Records and its contribution to music and American culture is our main focus this hour. Later in the program, we're going to twitch musical genres and talk about a new book on the history of heavy metal. But first, Stax Records. If you have ideas about the importance of this music and its influence, give us a call. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and our email address is TOTN@NPR.org. The Stax sound is now preserved at the Stax Museum of American Soul Music in Memphis, Tennessee. It includes the recording studio where the whole thing started. Deanie Parker joins us now. She's president and executive director of Soulsville, a nonprofit organization that operates the Stax Museum and the Stax Music Academy. She's with us from her office in Memphis, Tennessee, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be a part of your show this afternoon.
Now, the Stax Museum, I guess, was your vision, but your connection to it goes a lot deeper to this than your current job as head of this organization. You're part of its history.
Yes. As a matter of fact, some people refer to me as the fossil.
No, I'm sure they're being unkind.
No, actually, I don't mind it at all. In fact, I consider it a privilege to still be here so that I can talk with people and share some of the exciting things that I had an opportunity to experience from as early as 1961 when I first began with Stax Records working in the retail outlet, Satellite Records it was, with the co-founder, Estelle Axton, and then shortly thereafter had an opportunity to try my hand at becoming an aspiring artist thanks to the other co-founder, Jim Stewart, Estelle's brother, at Stax Records.
And you started selling popcorn and ended up as director of publicity.
Start selling those records right out there in the area that used to be the concession area for an old Capitol Theater that was later converted into Stax Records and then moved into the studio. And I think, you know, I did almost everything at Stax Records during those days that was legal to do.
let's just hold ourselves to the legal issues here then. Now, what was happening in the Memphis scene that helped give birth to Stax? As Eddie Floyd we were describing, almost all the musicians came from this area.
I like to tell people that this region, if you've not visited before, is centrally located between New Orleans and Nashville and Little Rock, Arkansas, and in this region next to the Delta in Mississippi where the great blues has come from, and here in the middle of where we've got some of the greatest gospel music ever created, we are very fortunate that we get to experience a blend of all of that. And actually, the talent coming out of Memphis is a product of the fusion of blues, gospel, jazz, and soul music. And so it was, I think, inevitable that the people, the talent that Stax Records was able to attract would be some of the greatest entertainers ever, like Johnny Taylor and Albert King, Booker T and the MGs, Isaac Hayes, Carl and Rufus Thomas, and the Barcays, and the list goes on and on.
Mm. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And our first caller is Paul, who joins us from Denver, Colorado.
Hi, I just had a quick comment about what you were trying to get to with the characteristic sound of the Stax Records earlier, and I think one of the major contributing factors was the Hammond organ groove that Booker T would lay down on so many tracks. I think that was a very important component of it. A lot of people maybe don't know about it.
Deanie Parker?
Your listener is right on cue. He must be a Stax music, a Memphis soul sound purist, because clearly Booker T and the MGs, along with the Marquees, who are known today as the Memphis Horns, were the core musicians. They were referred to as the house band. And when Booker wasn't on that B3 Hammond organ, Isaac was on keyboards, or either Marvell Thomas, who was Rufus Thomas's only son. And so that instrument, that keyboard, was a very, very defining part of the Stax sound out of Studio A.
Paul, I've always thought, you know, as much as I admired the organ, I always thought those sour horns were the essence of the Stax sound.
Yeah, well, that's certainly an important part of it, too. I just happen to be a Hammond organ freak.
I see. Okay.
And both of you are right about the horns, because people might not know it, but the horn lines became very significant when Otis Redding was recording at Stax Records in Studio A. And it was because, in lieu of background singers, Otis created the perfect accents on the horns and taught those horn lines to Wayne Jackson, to Andrew Love, Floyd Newman, and a number of the other woodwind musicians who made up the horn section for Stax Records band.
And we were saying so many of the musicians were from Memphis. Otis Redding, of course, was not.
Otis Redding came to us from Macon, Georgia.
Paul, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Certainly.
Let's get a quick call in from Karen in San Diego.
Well, good afternoon to everyone.
Afternoon.
I want to let you know that I really grew up on Stax record music, and I remember the old yellow label. It was quite beautiful. And when you saw the yellow Stax record label, before you heard it, you knew it was going to be a great song.
That's what I looked for when I went through those stacks of records. Not only, of course, Stax, but there was an accompanying label. I never quite understood, Dini, why there were two labels, Stax and Volt.
Well, Stax was the primary label. Volt was a subsidiary label, as was Enterprise, on which Isaac Hayes first recorded. On Respect, where Jesse Jackson, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, was recorded, Gospel Truth, that featured the famous Rance Allen group, mm-hmm. And we had Partee, and we had Hip Moms Mabley was on Partee, and we also had a rock and roll label. And so the reason was because in the old days, you see, the FCC was very particular about how many of any one company's songs were on the playlist.
Mm-hmm.
And in an effort to be able to have a greater number of songs or records on the playlist, one needed to devise other labels.
Yes.
So that enabled us to have, we could have a Volt on the charts, we could have on the playlist, we could have Stax and Respect, we could have just a variety of labels and artists being played simultaneously in the marketplace.
Well, I have one final question. I want to find out about the museum hours, but I wanted to ask you, whatever happened to the Soul Children? And I'll hang up and listen to the museum hours, and you tell me what happened to the Soul Children. And
thank you for your question. You.
And give us the hours very quickly.
Yes, the hours are 9 to 5 on weekdays, Monday through Saturday, and 1 to 5 on Sundays. And the Soul Children, two of them are still singing like they've never sung before, Norman West and John Colbert, also known as Blackfoot, and he is currently on the Malaco label.
And this is the Barcays. More from the history of Stax Records after a break. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the legacy of Stax Records, the great R&B label from Memphis, Tennessee. Our guest is Deanie Parker, president and executive director of Soulsville in Memphis, Tennessee. If you own any Stax Records or remember them as the soundtrack of your youth, call in with your favorite. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN@npr.org. And Deanie Parker, I'm not sure we gave enough space for your answer to that last question. Who were the Soul Children?
Well, the Soul Children were made up of John Colbert, Norman West, Shel Burdine, and Anita Lewis, all very, very young people, and their songs were written and produced by David Porter and Isaac Hayes.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a Jackson 5 kind of a deal?
Well, not quite. These guys were terribly, terribly soulful. I mean, purely soul music, if you will. Stax Records did not have a group comprised of female and male at that time, and so it was determined by the arrangers and the producers of Stax Records that it may be a good idea for us to have such a group. And they, David Porter and Isaac Hayes, went about the business of creating these superstars.
Now, there's also a website, I gather, where people can get more information about the museum.
Yes, absolutely. It's www.soulsvilleusa.com.
And here's another Stax song that may be familiar to many of you. Stax Records' Sam and Dave singing their biggest hit, Soul Man. David Porter helped write that song. He was part of a songwriting team with Isaac Hayes at Stax Records. He's still producing records at his studio in Memphis, Tennessee, and he joins us now from there, and good of you to be with us on Talk of the Nation.
I'm very happy to be with you.
Like Knock on Wood, we heard from Eddie Floyd earlier, songs usually come out of real-life stories. Where does Soul Man come from?
Well, during that particular period of time, really, it was a period of wanting to have as much pride in oneself as one possibly could, and it was just viewed as a way to make the male feel as the he-man, so to speak. And so Soul Man was just a motivational kind of thought to make African-American men at that particular time have a sense of pride and proud of who they were and what they were. And once we created the song really became universal for any and everyone, but it was a pride thing to make a man feel like the lady feel as though when he got to her, she had the real deal, the real thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, I guess in those times, there was not only obviously Stax Records going on in Memphis, but Motown Records, of course, in Detroit, and Curtis Mayfield and a lot of other people were putting on records out of Chicago. And were you all listening to one another? I assume you were.
Oh, without a doubt, you would. You would certainly listen to Motown during this period, and Curtis Mayfield a little before Motown had great, great music as well. Yeah, you would definitely would be listening. Chess out of Chicago as well had some great product. Yeah, you would listen to those people.
Hmm. Our next caller is Jeff, who joins us from Greensboro, North Carolina.
Hello.
Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
I think a lot of the music that came out of Stax. Did as much for the civil rights movement as all the marches and everything else did.
Hmm.
At least in my household, we listened to WLAC radio in Nashville, to the Hoss Man and all those guys. And to many of us, it was our first exposure to people of color.
That's funny. We have an email we got from Harry Pipkin in Cleveland, Ohio, who wrote, in the 60s, every weeknight beginning at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, WLAC Radio in Nashville had a fabulous R&B show featuring music from Stax and the other great studios. I have great memories of listening to the Hoss Man, Bill Allen, and John R.A. Is that how you pronounced it?
I'm not exactly sure. It was just John R.
John R. Okay.
Everybody called him John R.
Yeah, I remember him as well.
Deanie Parker, was that a big promotional vehicle? Was that an important outlet for this kind of music?
Absolutely. In fact, I grew up in the southern part of Ohio, and had it not been for WLAC radio station with Hoss Allen and John R. Richburg, I might never have heard Otis Redding and Booker T and the MGs and some of the other great music coming out of Memphis.
Jeff, you know, as you think back to those days, the exposure to this music seemed to be incredibly important for so many people around the country.
Good music was good music. It gave us something to talk about. We could talk about music, and race wasn't an issue. It was just good music. I was in love with Al Jackson's drumming.
David Porter, is it true I've read that Al Jackson always used the butt end of one of his drumsticks?
Well, Al Jackson was versatile to use any end of a drumstick. He was one of those persons that not only made the drum carry the beat, but carry the energy that gave an additional signature to the song. And that was a part of the magic of the whole Memphis sound, is what Al brought to the party when he would play on a record. I mean, it was just pocket, as we used to call it, that only he could supply. He was unbelievable as a musician.
Jeff, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Let's go now to Lou, and Lou is on the line from Sunrise, Florida.
How's it going?
Okay.
Right.
Listen, I had a question and a comment. My question is there any relationship between, well, obviously there must be some relationship, but I want to know, what is the relationship between Stax and Atlantic, because a lot of those artists are now sold under the Atlantic label. Can you tell me about that?
Deanie Parker, would you know about that?
Yes, and David Porter can speak to this also. Atlantic Records had a relationship with Stax Records when Stax was in its infancy, because Stax Records needed a distribution system. We were located here in Memphis, Tennessee, geographically not the best place to be, and we were not then known as the distribution center of America. Mm-hmm. It was only after Federal Express came in that happened. So nevertheless, we formed a relationship with Atlantic Records. I believe it was shortly after Rufus Thomas and Carla Thomas's release titled 'Cause I Love You became popular in the marketplace. And it was because of that relationship with Atlantic Records that Otis Redding's These Arms of Mine stayed in the marketplace for 8 months and continued to grow, as well as the Sam and Dave's and Booker T and the MGs and a number of the earlier records that were recorded at Stax Records. It was our means of getting the product out to the people in the marketplace.
So that's why Atlantic would still have the rights to some of those records?
Actually, there was a handshake deal, if you will, between Jim Stewart and the administrators with Atlantic Records that resulted in Atlantic Records being able to maintain our catalog at a time when Jim Stewart had decided that he wanted to sever relationship with Atlantic Records and link with another more promising organization for distribution opportunities.
Okay, Lou, thanks very much for the call.
Okay, and one other thing I wanted to say was I really, really appreciate all the work that those people did, because that music still holds up really good today, and compared to what is sold today as R&B, there is no comparison.
Thank you so very much. Appreciate that comment.
Okay, thanks, Lou. David Porter, the brother and sister who started Stax were white. Booker T and the MGs were integrated to white musicians, to black musicians. In the Memphis of the 1960s, did that create the fact that this was an integrated label? Did that create any tension?
Certainly not behind our doors. I mean, what really happened through that particular time was that particular group became as brother and sister. I mean, we were all so tremendously close. When we'd walk into that studio room, the only thing that was the focus was the creation of the music, and that was it. And that brought about a love and a respect for each other that was paramount every day that you go to work. It was a small group of people, but the loyalty was unquestioned between each other.
Let's go now to Robert, who joins us on the line from Durham, North Carolina.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I grew up in Chicago, which is roughly equidistant between Detroit and Memphis, and had, of course, its own vibrant R&B scene with VJ, Chess, and all the artists from there. What always struck me about Stax Records and drew me to the artists as opposed to Motown. And I in no way disparage the records I love that came out of Motown, but you could always identify a Motown record that was a sameness sounding hit factory element to them that didn't seem to be present in the Stax records. Stax were grittier somehow, had the sense of real people sitting in a room creating not by formula, but organically. And that's the thing I loved about Stax.
David Porter, you mentioned that, you know, obviously you all listened to the stuff coming out of Motown. Did you draw comparisons like that?
Well, the gentleman is 100% correct when he equates it to the realness and the feel. Our whole energy was about the emotional aspect of the song. When Isaac and I would write a song, the core reason as to why we would say it was good or bad was how it made one feel based on whatever the subject matter was. If it was a love song and you would feel love, we wanted to make you feel more in love when we created that particular song that we create than any one song that you may have heard. For instance, like When Something Is Wrong With My Baby, Something Is Wrong With Me. It's a very simple song, but the meat and the message of it and the way we wanted the song delivered, we wanted an emotion with it that made it so very, very powerful. And so our intent was to thrive more on making the feel right, making it feel right. It wasn't necessarily so profound that everything had to be in proper tunings. And sometimes you may listen to a great, great record on Stax, and there may be a tuning or pitch problem in a particular way, but it felt so good to you. That wasn't the point. The point was how good it made you feel.
And it's interesting you mentioned Something's Wrong With My Baby, one of my best favorite all-time slow dance records of all time. Thank you very much.
All right, great.
Was there a conscious rivalry, Deeni Parker, with Motown?
No, there really wasn't a rivalry. And I can only speak for those of us who were at Stax Records. We, quite frankly, admired and respected what Motown was doing. And, of course, we studied what Motown was doing, as well as a number of other labels. We didn't plagiarize. But there is, music alone has such an interesting effect on people. It kind of sort of neutralizes people who have a propensity to become overly competitive or zealous or enemies. We thought that Motown was especially beautiful in terms of what they were doing with grooming their artists and developing their songs, but our style was just different. Our philosophy was totally different. The part of the country in which we were allowed to grow up and to share our creative interest was totally different. And so we didn't try to be someone who we weren't. You know, we just accepted who we were, and we maximized it and enjoyed it. And we were right about it because, as the young man said earlier, our music has continued through the years. It's timeless.
One of my greatest moments, I mean, was when I met Brian and Eddie Holland, and they knew who I was, and certainly I knew who they were, and I wanted to have a picture because of my great respect for their creativeness. And on my studio wall right now, I'm looking at a photograph that we took in 1989. I mean, it was a great deal of respect for what they were doing, and certainly they respected what we were doing. And so, I mean, that's what it was about.
Here are some of the headlines today at NPR News. The United States is making changes in its civil administration in Iraq. L. Paul Bremer arrived in Baghdad today to take the lead role from General Jay Garner. And health workers in Hong Kong say they've determined some of the things that led to the spread of SARS from the hospital where it was first discovered. NPR's Joe Palca is covering that story, and NPR's Guy Raz is in Iraq. We'll hear from them both later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. Right now, you're listening to Talk of the Nation, also from NPR News. Our guests are Deeni Parker and David Porter, both long associated with Stax Records in Memphis, Tennessee, and Deeni Parker, now head of Soulsville, the organization which runs, has just opened the Stax Museum there. David Porter, have you been over to the museum?
Have I been over to the museum? Without a doubt. It is, to me, one of the greatest tributes to the city one could ever imagine. It is powerful, in my opinion, and I know it may sound a little self-serving because I'm in it to some extent, but it is something that not only captures what we were about at Stax Records, but to give homage to great talents such as Al Green and Aretha Franklin and Ike and Tina and Maurice White of Earth, Wind and Fire and many, many others. It is fantastic. I've been several times, and I'm very, very proud of it.
Let's go to another call. Lynn joins us on the line from Murray, Utah.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I have I just can't believe I've got this great opportunity. A friend of mine back in 73, a boyfriend, copied onto cassette for me an album by David Porter, and I wore it out, and I've looked for it at least once a year ever since. I've gone through all those yellow books at the record stores under the name David Porter, and I'm just hoping you can tell me the name of it and how to get a hold of it. I've always wanted to get another copy.
Wow.
And some of the songs were I Only Have Eyes for You and Hang on Sloopy.
Ah. Well, actually, you mentioned songs from two different albums. I had four albums doing my tenure with Stax. And the first album was a song on the that was titled Gritty Groovy and Getting It. And the song I Only Have Eyes for You was track one on that particular album. And the second album release was an album called Into a Real Thing, and that song, Hang on Sloopy, was on that album. And,
okay.
I would love to I wish I could get your information. I'd make a copy of it and send it to you.
It is
something that's very special to me.
Linda, hold on, and we'll get that information from you. We'll relay it to David Porter and maybe get you two together.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll try not to hang up on you, and I'll push the hold button and not the hang up button. Hold on, Lynn.
Thank you.
Just before we leave, Deanie Parker, you're now the, in a way, the curator of Stax's legacy there in Memphis. David Porter was talking about the importance of the museum. This has been a passion of yours for a long time.
Yes, it has. For a number of years, I have wanted very much to live to see the day when the great writers like David Porter and Isaac Hayes, the great artists like David Porter and Isaac Hayes and the Soul Children and Albert King and Johnny Taylor and Rufus and Carl and Booker T and the MGs and Eddie Floyd and William Bell, when they could be recognized, truly recognized for their contribution to soul music, the music that has influenced music all over the world for almost 30 years. I think that if we had not come to an end so tragically and so suddenly, it would have been more palatable. But we were forced to have to close our doors, and I never felt that these people got the kind of recognition that they deserved. And so now,
Deanie Parker, I'm afraid we're going to have to go, but thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Deanie Parker, President and Executive Director of Soulsville. David Porter, thank you for your time as well.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And let's leave with one of the great Stax songs, the wonderful Otis Redding, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay.
It's a dock my home. Now I'm just going to sit at the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Sitting on a dock of the bay, wasting time.
I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.